Chapter 3. Old Baldy. The unprovoked attack at Little Africa left all of the boys shaken. Weeks passed without a visit to their beloved haunt. Eventually, they started talking of the inevitable return, but each discussion transitioned into more of a strategy session than plans for a fun outing. Justin and Emmett both owned pellet guns, although they knew that the adults would never condone taking them off to war. They would have to sneak it. Chris owned a slingshot and was a pretty good aim. Kyle and Trent could use the guns hidden in the tree, or Trent could simply rely on his throwing arm. They had just about arrived at a plan to return to Little Africa when Kyle's father extended an invitation for Chris to join their family for a weekend camping trip at Garner State Park, about a 3-hour drive from San Angelo. Justin, Emmett, and Trent all harbored some unspoken jealousy that Chris was always the one who got invited to outings like this. However, it was Chris who lived on North Street and had a relationship with the family, so he was always the chosen one. Laura was quick to grant permission. She never had the money to treat Chris to weekend road trips, and it also suited her purposes to have him out of the house for the weekend. The camping trip to Garner State Park meant that the next visit to Little Africa would have to be postponed. Kyle's father was fairly confident that the weather would turn cold in the coming weeks, and so he chose the last weekend of September to use some vacation from his job at GTE. Kyle and Chris didn't complain because it meant that they would be allowed to skip school on Friday and Monday. The plan was to leave early Friday morning and return on the following Monday evening. It was intended as a quick getaway before winter closed its grip on West Texas. Robert stowed the camping and fishing gear in the truck. Then he led while Jan followed to the station wagon with the kids. They caravanned south toward the crystal clear waters of the Frio River. Kyle's siblings seemed to need a bathroom break every 30 minutes, despite having only a glass of orange juice before departing. Brenda was Kyle's 6-year-old sister, and James was his 9-year-old brother. His father, Robert, led in the truck. He pulled over each time they disappeared from view in the mirror, waiting with increasing frustration for their return after each break. They finally arrived at Garner State Park just after 1 p.m., which was a full 3 hours later than Robert had intended. There were several families and a Boy Scout troop registering ahead of them, which consumed almost 2 more hours. Robert was livid by the time they actually pulled out of the park ranger station and drove on to the semi-primitive shelter in the Pecan Grove camping area at the base of Old Baldy. The brown, semi-primitive shelter at Garner State Park consisted of a rectangular building in 2 sections. It was screened in with a front area that was large enough for a picnic table. The back section consisted of louvered wooden siding that angled out from the building in such a way as to block rainwater while still allowing for ventilation. It was all one room, with the back area being more enclosed. One light bulb and electrical outlet were available for the not-so-rugged campers. The floor was made of concrete, and the roof was shingled, so the building was more or less waterproof, except in hard-driving horizontal rain that permeated the walls of screen mesh. One water faucet stood about 3 feet from the front door for cooking and cleaning. Old Baldy is the signature mountain of Garner State Park. The side that towers above the campground area is a distinctive stone edifice rising almost 1,900 feet. The name is derived from the massive arch that gives the impression of a bald man's head. At the base of Old Baldy are several hundred feet of huge boulders that tumbled down decades ago, locked in time where they lay by millions of pounds of packed soil, gravel, and enormous bald cypress trees that hold it all in place with roots that power into the dirt and wrap around the buried stones. Kyle and Chris both stared at it in wonder upon arrival, but soon were inducted to help unload the camping gear. It was almost 5 p.m. by the time setup was complete, and Robert could walk down to the river with the kids. Jan stayed behind to start dinner. The Frio River runs through a lush, enchanted area in south-central Texas. The water is clear to the point that pebbles can be perfectly viewed, even where the water depth reaches 20 feet or more. Most sections of the river are in motion where it flows through Garner State Park. Some rapids are only ankle deep and easily withstood. However, it is virtually impossible to stand in areas where the flowing water is knee-deep or higher. The campground where Kyle's family was staying ran alongside part of the river that is fairly placid, although the current does continue to move downstream at a steady pace, like an unstoppable juggernaut. It is the one area with a fairly consistent depth of only about 4 feet and a wide berth of about 130 feet from bank to bank. This part of the river is roughly 1/4 mile long and is capped by a man-made concrete dam approximately 5 feet tall. The river clears the dam by about 2 inches, resulting in a deceptively gentle waterfall. The portion that is held back by the dam is labeled as the swimming hole on the park map. The lower side of the dam is much shallower. The rapids wander downriver about 50 feet and continue on past a sign on the far bank that reads, "Private Property, Keep Out." That is the western border of Garner State Park. Jan started preparing dinner while Robert walked the kids down to the swimming hole. James and Brenda were excited to see paddle boats for rent, and they easily persuaded Robert to get one, only to discover that Brenda couldn't even reach the pedals, and James couldn't turn them. Therefore, Robert had to provide the propulsion, while James and Brenda took turns driving. Kyle and Chris walked along the ridge of the dam after seeing some other boys make it all the way across without falling. It was only about 2 feet wide and slick with moss, not to mention the water swiftly careening over the top. Both of them made it across successfully, although Chris did have a close call at about the halfway mark. Kyle and Chris started hiking up a trail after traversing the dam. It meandered off to the east, then climbed to a cliff approximately 20 feet above the waterline. There they found a group of about 15 kids taking turns on a rope swing. Kyle immediately wanted to get in line, but Chris was apprehensive. However, after watching several kids successfully swing out into the river, including a girl who looked to be only about 7 years old, Chris gained some confidence and finally got in line. His chief concern was hitting bottom, but he deduced that it was probably safe when an obese teen rose to the top unscathed. Kyle jumped without hesitation when his turn came, as expected. He swam back about 10 feet after surfacing and started treading water as he awaited Chris's jump. Also, as expected, Chris hesitated while standing on the ridge, rope in hand, with a line of adrenaline junkies waiting impatiently behind. Kyle anticipated this, which was why he stayed out in the water. After several seconds, one particularly impetuous 8-year-old blurted out, "You gonna go or chicken out? Come on, we're waiting." That was when Kyle called out to him, "You can do it, Chris. Dead Man's Drop was worse and you did that. Just go for it." Kyle was smart to reference a past fear that Chris had already overcome, also with Kyle's coaching. He lived through that, and there was a strong likelihood that he would live through this too, he surmised. He tightened his grip on the rope and bent his knees, causing his feet to lift up from the soft earth. Then he was suddenly in motion, swinging out over the transparent abyss. He could see the bottom of the crystal-clear river, giving the illusion that it was only about 2 feet deep. Suddenly, a rush of intense fear came over him, just as the rope reached the maximum arc and he started to slow. Kyle to the rescue again.
"Let go! Let go now!"
Chris finally did, almost halfway back to the landing. Within an instant, he was painfully and gleefully aware of why they call it the Cold River. He thought surely his feet would touch the bottom and possibly break his ankles, but his 96-pound body came nowhere close. The pure water of the Rio Frio engulfed him until he swam back up to the surface and proclaimed,
"That was awesome!"
Kyle was relieved that he didn't hold on all the way back to the cliffside. They both swam back to the shore and got back in line, going again and again until the shadows grew long and most other kids had returned to their camps. Eventually, they walked back to the waterfall and across to the camping area. Everybody else was almost done eating dinner by the time they arrived back at camp, famished and exhausted, but as content and happy as either had ever been in their entire lives. Later that night, after roasting marshmallows and sitting out around the campfire for hours, everybody except for Kyle and Chris retired to the semi-primitive shelter and fell asleep almost immediately. The two boys slept outside in a tent and talked until after midnight, covering topics from Star Wars to girls to the possibility of the impending war at Little Africa. Chris was still discussing strategy when he heard Kyle's breathing become deep and rhythmic. He realized that he'd probably been talking to himself for several minutes, and so he wrapped himself snug in the sleeping bag and was asleep within minutes. Robert had to wake them the next morning as both boys slept well into breakfast. They had so utterly exhausted themselves on the previous day that they didn't hear Jan cooking, or the argument that James and Brenda got into because he had her seat and didn't want to move. Robert explained the day's agenda over breakfast, starting with a game of putt-putt golf near the camp gift store. Why a putt-putt golf course existed at Garner State Park was a mystery to everybody, but James and Brenda were both adamant that they wanted to play. Robert decided to do that first and get it out of the way, so that they could get back to the river. He said that they would do some hiking after lunch and possibly go up the backside of Old Baldy. Both Kyle and Chris were filled with anticipation at the thought of that. After breakfast, they all set out to conquer Robert's plan, starting with the one activity that didn't really seem to fit in, putt-putt golf. Everybody enjoyed the game. Everybody except for Kyle, that is. James immediately started sinking putts, and Kyle's countenance worsened with each drop. Being intensely competitive caused no small amount of frustration for Kyle whenever he was outdone by his 9-year-old little brother. This scenario was seldom a problem, but James was somewhat of a savant when it came to golf. Kyle really gave it his best, but he still came in third behind James and his father. He made a few derogatory comments along the way, attempting to boost his own ego at James's expense, but Jan corrected him every time. That caused him to become even more frustrated. He was in an outright bad mood after the golf game, to the point that Robert asked if they needed to go back to the campsite and have a talk. He placed his hand on his belt buckle when asking that question, and Kyle quickly retorted that wouldn't be necessary, and was substantially embarrassed for Chris to witness this whole episode. The entire group had worn swimsuits to the game so that they could go straight to the river afterwards. Jan hadn't experienced the swimming hole during the previous day because she was too busy making camp and preparing dinner, and also because a glass of red wine before everybody returned was a better option. It was a short walk to the river from the mini golf course. Brenda kept running ahead because she was anxious for Jan to see the waterfall and show her where they rowed the paddle boats. Kyle and Chris walked out onto the dam and sat down at the halfway mark. There were others playing on and near the dam, but nobody was crossing it at the moment, so they were able to sit and take in all of the grandeur of Old Baldy. Their excitement built as they considered the adventure that would follow lunchtime. The others waded out into the shallows at the base of the waterfall, navigating in waters that were ankle to knee deep and flowing fast. Robert and James were exploring on their own while Jan held Brenda's hand, and the two attempted to make it all the way across to a calm area that was about knee deep. Two children were wandering around in the shimmering, almost still pool, picking up rocks from the bottom. For some reason, it seemed like the place to be. Brenda lost her footing several times, but Jan held on to her until they came upon a deeper area between two underwater stone formations. The span seemed easily passable, until Jan stepped off a ledge that was obscured by the bubbling rapids, causing her to lose her footing and fall into the gap, also taking Brenda down with her. She managed to hold on to Brenda's hand, but something was obviously wrong, judging by the scream that Brenda let out. At first, the boys thought that she had just been startled or possibly hit her knee when they fell. But then Chris noticed in horror that the rocks downstream were turning a red hue. He realized that Brenda was bleeding, and bleeding a lot. Jan screamed, and Robert ran over to lift Brenda out of the chasm that they had fallen into. That was when it came to light that her foot was badly cut, although nobody was able to determine exactly how. Their best guess was that a sharp, water-eroded rock must have been the culprit. Robert clamped down hard with his hand, and she howled in pain again. One man wrapped her foot with his own T-shirt. It was blood-soaked by the time they reached the shore. The boys quickly made their way to the side of the river where a small group was huddled. Fortunately, one of the other campers was a nurse who had a professional first aid kit in her car. She cleaned the gash that ran the full length of Brenda's right foot from pinky toe to heel. Then she wrapped it tight, all the while Brenda wailing so loudly that the park ranger heard her from the gift shop. Jan thanked everybody for assisting. She was also bruised from smashing into the opposing ledge beneath the waterline, but refused any attention from the nurse, who advised that Brenda would need to be stitched up at the hospital in Uvalde, about 30 minutes away. The park ranger showed up shortly after the crowd dispersed, but he had missed all the action. Robert carried Brenda back to camp, where they gathered some clothing and prepared to load up for the trip to Uvalde. Kyle realized that this would likely be an all-day affair, and he was also having a very hard time with all the blood and Brenda's incessant screaming and crying. He asked his father if they could stay at the campsite instead of going into town with them. Robert was initially opposed to the idea, but Jan, after careful consideration, thought it might be best to not have three anxious boys stuck in the emergency room while Brenda was cared for. She recommended that they stay behind, including James. This caused Kyle to have mixed emotions, as he had no desire to be responsible for James. Robert finally agreed, but with conditions. 1. Watch your brother. And 2. Stay at the campsite and go nowhere else. No hiking, climbing, or swimming until we return. Kyle protested, because staring at the fire for hours seemed almost as boring as sitting in a waiting room. However, Chris encouraged him to accept the terms. He had brought a book called Where the Red Fern Grows that he was perfectly content to read until they returned. He also encouraged Kyle that they could think of something, mostly because the stress on Jan's face was obvious. His real motive was to relieve Robert and Jan of three needy boys so that Brenda could have their full attention. He was also very uncomfortable because Jan looked as if she may lose all control of her emotions at any moment, so he just wanted them to leave. Kyle finally agreed. Brenda and her parents were off to Uvalde within minutes. Planet Earth seemed to be unaware of the whole calamity. All of the weather patterns and ecological systems had continued on with no compassion for what the Markham family had just experienced, or the pain that Brenda still had to face when they finally reached Uvalde Memorial Hospital. A mild cold front had been moving steadily south throughout the day, reaching Junction just as they were starting their golf game. It was slowly enveloping Garner State Park by the time Robert, Jan, and Brenda pulled away from the park entrance. The boys felt the chill back at camp as the day transformed from sunny and warm to dreary and foreboding. Blue-gray clouds swirled around the summit of Old Baldy, settling further down as the day wore on. The three of them moved all the food into the shelter, where they had lunch, almost in silence. The drizzle and cool wind had driven everybody away from the nearby swimming hole. Although it was only about 3 p.m., a quiet had fallen over the whole park as each family retreated to their shelters, tents, and campers. The droplets falling from the sky were not enough to extinguish a campfire if it were properly tended to. However, most people didn't wish to stand out in the uncomfortable, damp weather to keep stoking and fueling, and so the fire started to die out one by one. To Chris, the fire brought some sense of comfort, even though they couldn't stand out in the weather to absorb the warmth. Therefore, he kept darting out of the shelter every few minutes to stoke it and add wood when necessary. The boys sat and stared at the flames through the screened-in facade. Kyle's impatience and frustration rose to a crescendo within only about 15 minutes, and then he blurted out, "This sucks. I'm bored. Let's go do something." James reminded him of the ultimatum that Robert had laid out before leaving. Kyle was quick to snap at him. "And this is why I didn't want you to stay. I'm going out, and if you tell Dad..." James cut him off.
"I won't. I'll go too."
He didn't really want to, but the pressure to be a contributor and not a detractor was too much, and so he feigned willingness, although his conscience and good sense screamed otherwise. He also wasn't keen to the idea of sitting in the shelter alone with such gloom enveloping it. As for Chris, he was also reluctant to disobey Robert's orders, but Kyle convinced him that they wouldn't really disobey, just bend the rules a little. He had noticed that some of the nearby boulders, stacked together approximately 100 feet up the base of Old Baldy, had formed a sort of cave. He wanted to go just to that point and check it out.
"Dad meant we can't go far or climb up the mountain. This is practically next to our camp. He wouldn't care if we just have a peek."
Chris and James agreed, but with much hesitation. A sheen of cold drizzle had already covered the entire valley floor by the time the boys exited the small brown shelter. The fall foliage was blanketing the ground enough to cause any hiker to slide around even on a sunny, dry day. The addition of water to the already slippery slope caused the boys to struggle as they worked their way upwards. Kyle led the group, with Chris behind him and James further back. The boys clambered for tree branches, roots, and boulders to elevate themselves step by step. At one point, James grabbed a stone that was jutting out of the leaves and mud, only to have it come loose in his hand. That caused him to slide down about 10 feet before he got a foothold. Chris paused and waited for him to catch up, but Kyle pressed on, oblivious to anything happening behind him. The supposed cave turned out to be an illusion. The way that the boulders were positioned and leaning caused it to appear that a cave existed, but actually they were staggered and not even touching. This was disappointing and failed to satiate Kyle's need for adventure. He surveyed farther up the hill for anything interesting to investigate. James looked back in astonishment and commented on how high they were already. Even at this low elevation, they could already see all of the pecan grove camping area, albeit somewhat obscured by the thick, bald cypress trees. James commented on how their shelter looked like a small rectangle from this high up. Kyle wasn't listening, though. He was already looking further up the hill and making plans to go just a little further. His desire to explore was outweighing his concern for safety or his father's silly rules. He could see a tree line about 50 feet higher, followed by some sort of ridge that they should be able to reach easily. He convinced them to go just a little bit higher. Chris was concerned that his parents might return soon, but Kyle was sure they had hours, and he was right about that. Kyle's perception of a ridge just overhead was partially correct. It was more of a narrow trail, possibly man-made, but it was hard to tell. Behind the trail was a wall of stone and soil. The trail itself was rocky and good for traction, all things considered. Although the mud, leaves, and rocks were slick from the steadily falling mist, it wasn't so bad that they couldn't get one foothold after another. And so they started walking up the winding ridge that led off to the northwest as it meandered up the base of Old Baldy. All three boys were in swimsuits and t-shirts and wearing tennis shoes that were caked in mud. The wind got colder and harder as they climbed higher and higher, causing them to shiver. However, the effort required to climb and claw their way up the narrow ridge kept them warm enough to keep going, despite the elements trying to push them back. Within about 10 minutes, they reached a landing where the trees fanned out and they were able to observe the entire Frio River Valley. Parts of it were shrouded in clouds that obscured the valley floor, some white and some dark gray, contrasting against each other in stark opposition. An expanse of steep earth stretched beneath their feet at an angle of about 30 degrees. It seemed almost flat because of the orange and yellow leaves that obscured the earth beneath and confused the observer's perception. A few boulders and bald cypress trees jutted up from this part of the mountainside, but most of it was a barren, sloped plain. Approximately 75 feet down the steep incline was a near-vertical drop-off. The boys could not know from their vantage point that the cliff beyond their line of sight rose straight up from the canyon floor, with a massive pile of boulders and craggy trees at the base. This was the satisfaction that Kyle was looking for. Although they had only conquered the lower area of the base of Old Baldy, Kyle felt a great sense of accomplishment to have achieved this height and this view. The three of them stood in wonder, breathing hard and trying to recover from the climb. The swirling mist was so slight that they hardly noticed it and could not hear it landing on the leaves and rocks. There was a daunting wind that came in gusts. The wind and the sound of the leaves was all that could be heard until Chris spoke up.
"It's already starting to get dark. We'd better go back. If your dad finds us up here, he'll kill us."
He was right. Although it was only about 4:30 p.m., the density of the darkening clouds caused the day to wane early. The boys were so focused on conquest that they didn't even realize how fast they were burning daylight. They had no flashlights and hadn't intended to climb this high. If they were to get caught in the dark, then they might be lost all night, and the wind was getting colder by the minute. Kyle was almost in a trance-like state, gawking at the majesty of the view. However, Chris's observation caused him to snap back to reality.
"You're right. We better get going."
James had been last as they ascended, and so he was at the front of the line to descend. The ridge was barely wide enough for one person, and so the three formed a single-file line as they turned to go back down. Chris and Kyle started to move while James stood still.
Kyle called out to him, "James, go! We have to hurry!"
James didn't budge. Kyle moaned before continuing,
"He's afraid of heights. James, just look at the trail and start walking. It's not that steep."
Still no movement from James. He was completely frozen, but not for the reason that Kyle had assumed. Kyle's frustration was growing exponentially. They simply had no time for this. Their parents may have returned already for all they knew, and each passing second increased the likelihood that they would get caught. Kyle straddled Chris while keeping his left foot stationary such that his back was facing the valley, causing the two of them to be abreast on a ledge that was really only wide enough for one. While carefully contorting himself to the point that he could reach James, he muttered his frustration to the air.
"God, I wish they'd taken you with them."
With that, he smacked James on the right shoulder blade with the ball of his hand and yelled out,
"Go!"
The jarring hit startled James. He had heard nothing since Kyle started yelling at him. He was lost in thought, perplexed and staring at something back down the trail that had his complete focus. To be struck from behind and yelled at caused him to whirl around and stumble backwards. Chris and Kyle watched in horror as he stepped off the edge of the ridge and fell forward while sliding feet first and face down on the steep, wet, muddy incline. Kyle reached out to him as he fell, and he reached to Kyle, but they were too far apart. James stopped slipping for a moment and froze, looking up at Chris and Kyle in a state of complete terror. Kyle tried to lean forward and close the gap, but he was still precariously balanced on the ledge next to Chris and almost lost his balance. James then attempted to pull himself back up to the ridge, but lost ground with every push of his feet and every claw of his hands. It was almost as if the steeply angled mountainside had turned into quicksand, worsening his situation with each desperate kick. This caused him to panic to the point that he started thrashing at the thick bed of leaves and mud, which only exacerbated his descent. There were also a couple of lurches downward that were unexplainable, as if something had pulled him by the ankles. Soon he was careening toward the edge, flailing as he slid on the leaves while grabbing frantically at the ground and screeching in fear. James rolled over and tried to catch himself by bending his knees and digging into the layers of leaves and soft soil. This did little to decrease the velocity, but it did give him a sobering view of the cliff edge that was racing toward him, now only about 30 feet away. At that moment, he noticed a low-hanging tree branch, almost horizontal and only about 3 feet above the ground. He was speeding toward it at lightning speed and almost thought that he heard an audible voice say, "This is your one chance. Don't miss it." James sat up and tried to stand, intending to surf to his salvation. However, his feet slid out from under him, causing him to fall back into a sitting position. He tried again just as he closed in on the branch by about 5 feet and was about halfway between vertical and horizontal when he was on it. It was just about 2 feet above his head when he reached up and grabbed hold. His entire body swung out and the branch made a cracking sound, but held firm. For a moment, he seemed to levitate horizontally above the mountain with his feet almost even with his shoulders. Then his feet fell as he hung at a complete stop, gasping and trembling uncontrollably, while adrenaline coursed through every cell of his body. Chris and Kyle stood in stunned horror and unable to speak after realizing that James had been saved by a malformed tree branch. They both heard the crack and for a split second were veritably positive that James would plummet to his death while holding a broken bald cypress tree limb. They couldn't do anything except breathe heavily, trying to assess the situation and coming to terms with how close James had come to certain death. It was Chris who first emerged from the fog of fear and started assessing the state of things and making a plan. His immediate concern was ensuring that James was secure, precarious though that security may be. All that stood between James and eternity was a 3-inch circumference tree branch that made a cracking sound when he latched onto it. Chris called out to him, "Pull yourself over!" James didn't move.
"Pull yourself to the trunk. It might break. James, get over to the tree, now!"
His voice cracked as he screamed at James, who finally heard and processed the command. James slowly righted himself on the unstable and slick ground at his feet. Then he stepped right while holding onto the branch. It only took 2 steps and he was clutching the base of the tree. Then he called back to Chris in a shrill panic,
"Help me!"
Chris surveyed the slanted plain before them. James was toward the eastmost edge. While the incline was almost devoid of trees, there was a decent tree line with mostly interconnected limbs along the outer edge. However, it was a good 10 feet or more from the nearest tree to James. Chris looked at Kyle, who was ashen white and trembling, unable to speak.
"We have to get down there. Come on."
He walked to the topmost tree and grabbed on before stepping off the edge of the ridge. Kyle didn't move.
"Kyle, come on! We have to get down there!"
Kyle jolted and mumbled, "Yeah, I'm coming." The two worked their way down to James, tree by tree. Each step was tenuous and laborious as they both worked to ensure that they had a firm grip onto something stable. At one point, they had to sit and slide while holding onto a root until encountering the next tree. Finally, they reached James, where he was clinging to the tree trunk just above the edge of the cliff. Chris directed this effort, as Kyle was in no state to lead, to the point that Chris wondered if he'd made a mistake by asking Kyle to help. He feared that he may end up having to rescue both of them. From the outer edge, he was able to make it across to the tree nearest to James. However, they were still much too far apart to connect.
"Kyle, you're going to have to hold me. I can't reach him on my own. We have to make a chain."
He extended his right hand, crossed left at his chest. Kyle stood motionless, petrified and bewildered.
"Kyle, you have to hold me. I can't get to him on my own. We have to make a chain."
Kyle responded in a shaky voice.
I can't.
Chris lashed out with a voice so stern that it caused Kyle to flinch.
"You have to. Listen to me. If you don't help me, then your brother is going to die. You have to do this."
Chris raised his voice.
"Do you want your brother to die?"
Kyle slowly shook his head.
"Then take my hand."
Chris's hand lunged forward and Kyle reluctantly latched on. Chris moved toward James and unwound himself along some interconnected branches until his back was against the next tree trunk with the edge of the cliff further behind. He clung to a low-hanging limb and inched toward James until it turned vertical. Then he told James to come back out onto the cracked limb that had originally stopped his descent. James complied, working his way closer and closer to Chris, who finally told him to stop for fear that his weight being so far away from the trunk would cause it to give way. They each stretched to within about 2 feet from fingertip to fingertip. Then Chris spoke to Kyle again.
"I have to step out. You have to hold me. If you let go, then we're both dead."
Quivering, Kyle nodded. Chris moved his grip to Kyle's forearm so that the two could interlock their grip. Then he dug in his left foot beneath the ground cover and pulled himself away from the tree that his back was resting against. Almost immediately, he started to slide downwards. Kyle moved slowly to the same tree, wrapping his left arm around it for stability. Kyle was facing forward toward the edge of the cliff, while Chris was facing the ridge above. The two were locked in a death grip, but barely able to hold on due to their wet hands, fear, and exhaustion. Kyle noticed something floating just beyond the edge of the cliff. At first, he thought it was a low-hanging cloud, but it was so dense that even the darkest gray rain clouds behind it were in contrast. He tried to focus as it began to creep over the edge, undulating in an unnatural pattern. In a very low tone, he asked nobody in particular,
"What is that?"
Chris craned his neck to see down the slope, and then he saw it too. Kyle called out,
"Chris!"
"I know,"
Chris responded.
"I see it. We have to hurry."
"What is it?"
Kyle asked.
"I don't know. There's no time. Hold on to me."
Chris stretched his arm as far as he could. James extended his too, reaching out with all his might until his small hand latched on. Chris pulled James to himself with a sudden manic jerk. Both of them immediately started sliding. Chris was able to propel James across his chest, sort of pushing and sort of pulling, until he grabbed onto Kyle's shirt and pulled himself up. His chest was pressed to Kyle's back, leaning forward on a tree. Then Kyle and Chris both pulled until Chris was able to climb and sandwich James between the two of them. For a moment, all three of them stared at the creeping dark mass that was working its way toward them, now only about 20 feet away. Chris reached across to the adjoining tree limb and pulled himself across. He pulled James over and Kyle followed. All three boys were back at the tree line within a matter of seconds. They started scrambling up the incline with Chris and Kyle both favoring James to make sure that he made it to the top safely. The strange darkness that was creeping up the mountainside had vanished, or dissipated, or something, by the time they reached the ridge. Light was really becoming scarce by the time the boys made it back to the trail. They practically ran back down the mountain, reaching the bottom just as the night air turned outright cold, and it was almost impossible to see anything except shapes and shadows. They were surprised and relieved to find that the camp was still empty. Chris was disappointed that the fire was out completely. They washed the mud from their shoes and socks in the faucet and changed into dry clothes. Then they retired to the tent, shivering with cold, exhausted, and adrenaline still elevated. Kyle and James shared a sleeping bag while Chris had his own. Chris read his book with a flashlight as Kyle lay awake while holding on to James almost as tightly as he had clung to the tree that anchored the human chain. Kyle had no concern that Chris knew full well that he was clinging to his brother. As for James, he drifted off to sleep after only a few minutes. Kyle could not withstand the emotions that came over him after James was asleep. Tears welled up and rolled down his face. He tried to hold back, but it was no use. Chris just kept reading and pretended that he didn't notice at first. Eventually, he looked over the top of his book and said, without looking at Kyle, "He's okay." Kyle was silent for several seconds before responding with a broken voice.
"He could have died. It would have been my fault."
"It would have been all our faults," Chris retorted. "We shouldn't have been up there at all. Your dad said not to."
Chris's willingness to share in the responsibility brought some comfort to Kyle, even though he didn't really buy it. He exhaled a very deliberate sigh before collecting himself and asking rhetorically,
"What was that thing coming up the mountain? It looked just like Little Africa. It looked just like what we saw at Little Africa."
"Yeah, I thought so. I mean, I didn't see it at Little Africa, but that was how you described it. But why would it be here, too?"
Chris was still looking over the top of his book, staring off into nothing, when he answered,
"I don't know. Maybe it's following us."
Neither said anything after that. Kyle finally fell asleep, as did Chris after reading about how Billy Coleman found a KC baking powder can to use as a piggy bank. One more question occurred to him just as he was drifting off. Were the shadows responsible for Brenda's injury, too? He had no time to fully contemplate that before his consciousness surrendered and he faded away. It was just after 10 p.m. by the time the Markhams pulled up. The boys slept through their arrival. Jan thought it strange to find James asleep next to Kyle in the same sleeping bag. It was completely out of character for Kyle to allow that, as he always preferred to keep some space between himself and James. It had been a long day, especially for little Brenda. Her entire foot was bandaged to the ankle, and she had crutches to use while it healed. They had given her some pain medication that caused her to sleep deep, so she was out until morning. The boys slept until almost 10 a.m. of the following morning. Jan had breakfast ready, and they were famished. However, Robert had packed up everything else. He explained that they would have to cut the trip short due to Brenda's injury. None of the boys seemed upset about it, and that perplexed Robert. He assumed their lack of disappointment rooted in the cold, wet weather and didn't ask questions. Jan was really frustrated with how wet and muddy the boys' shoes and clothing were. They hadn't cleaned them as well as they thought. Kyle told her that they played in the rain because they were bored, and she bought it. Kyle, Chris, and James were quiet as they pulled away from the campsite, staring out the back window of the station wagon at the face of Old Baldy. They each thought that they saw something dark swirling out and back into the stone face just before the mountain was out of view. The group arrived back at San Angelo at about 2:30 p.m. on Sunday afternoon. Everybody was weary from the journey and the whole experience.